Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to what is being paid attention to, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Welcome all. Welcome to Attention Talk Radio. Today is Friday, October the 2nd at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in the year 2009. Today we're going to talk about the MetaFocus method, taking an insightful look at metaphoric conversations. And with us in our virtual studio today is Dr. Richard Siegel. We will touch base with him in a second, but before we do, a few announcements. There will be no show next week. I will be traveling in a conference up in Cleveland, and will be it'll be just kind of challenging to do the show. So we will take a week break, but we will return on the 16th. And with us will be Dan Pruitt. He was with us a couple weeks ago for a real fun look. He'll be taking a look at the many different versions of attention deficit disorder, and it. Dan was on about 3 weeks ago. We had a great conversation and a real good show and a lot of follow-up. So I'm very anxious for Dan to be back, and we'll be talking about that. But enough of that. Today, again, we have Dr. Siegel here, and we're going to talk about the MetaFocus method. So, Dr. Siegel, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Siegel and I had the opportunity to meet over the telephone a couple months ago, and he was explaining to me some of the things that he does, and I think by the time the conversation was over with, I got to have this guy on a show because there's so much of what he does and his philosophy that kind of mirrors ultimately what this show is all about, and it's looking at things differently. So first, Dr. Siegel, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, and after you do that, we'll start talking about the MetaFocus method.
Sure. I've been a psychotherapist for about 35 years now, and I've noticed over the past 10 or 12 years in working with people that every so often there would be an improvement in their performance, whether it was a hobby or a sport. They'd come back to me and tell me that their skills as a horse rider were improved, or their in writing poetry, their mind was clearer. And so I started to think, well, there's something related to what I'm doing that is helping to improve performance. So I spoke to a coach out in California, a University of California, Santa Cruz tennis coach, Bob Hansen, and he said he was having difficulties with one of the students, Matt Seeberger, with his performance. And so Matt and I hooked up by phone, and we talked for a bit, and I put him through a metaphoric conversation. It's a way of taking out the therapy part and just focusing on the metaphor part of the brain, which I'll explain in a minute. At any rate, when we finished, we spoke a few times. He went on to win 30 consecutive matches and 8 NCAA championships in tennis.
Wow, that's impressive.
What happens is we allow the innate mind to take control, and it creates new points of control where concentration is improved and confidence is improved, because you feel more in control, and so you are. And the way we accomplish that is by using both parts of the brain. Usually while we're awake, we tap in mostly to the left logical hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
When we're asleep, then we usually mostly focus on the right visual brain, the right visual hemisphere.
Uh-huh.
So the process I use employs both.
Okay.
So that the left brain is sort of actually looking inside the right brain to see what's going on there, and this is not the imagination. These are what are called inherent, or I should say resident images.
Mm.
If you said to me, I'm angry all the time, and we found a volcano there, well, it may be the first time we've called it a volcano, but it had been there for years before you and I spoke.
Interesting.
So that's a resident image. If we try to make that volcano just go away, then we'd be using the imagination because that volcano's there.
So interesting. Which you said a second. Interesting. You take the therapy part out and you left the metaphor part in.
Right.
Can you speak to that for the listeners to understand? In other words,
we're just going to look at the performance issues. We don't have to go into prolonged therapy and look at issues about childhood necessarily. Let me give you an example.
Okay.
A dentist came to see me. He said, "You know, when I'm with my wife and another couple, and I want to speak up, I'm okay. I'm pretty comfortable. But if I'm with a group of people, more than just me, my wife, and another couple, I clam up."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "So when you clam up, what has to happen for you to not clam up?" He says, "Well, I never thought of it like that, but I guess I'd have to not quite feel so weak inside."
Wow.
Yeah, so all right. So as you can know about feeling weak inside, whereabouts inside do you feel weak inside? And he said, "Well, I guess I feel that mostly in my stomach." "Whereabouts in your stomach do you feel weak inside when you feel that mostly in your stomach?" He said, "Right in the middle." "When you feel weak right in the middle, what's it like right in the middle of a stomach?"
Mm-hmm.
"It's soft and mushy." "Soft and mushy like what?" "Like
mm-hmm.
clay."
Mm-hmm.
Now, that soft, mushy clay is the resident image.
Uh-huh.
And consciously and cognitively, he says, "I don't feel strong enough to speak out." Subconsciously, right brain, resident image is soft, mushy clay. And so unconsciously, he's operating out of the soft, mushy clay. Now,
yep.
I'm asking questions about it. I said, "So now that we have soft, mushy clay, does it have a color? Does it have a temperature? Does it move at all? Does it have a weight?
Yep.
Does it have moisture?" And
uh-huh.
I'm questioning the image, the metaphor. And he says, by the seventh or eighth question, he says, "Well, that's interesting." I said, "What's that?" He says, "I don't know. All these questions are either bringing it to the light of day or the open air, because I think it's getting harder." So, so as soft, mushy clay is beginning to get harder, and how hard can it get?
Mm-hmm.
He says, "Well, it's just it's getting real hard." "And real hard like what?"
Yep.
And he said, "Well, it's kind of getting hard like steel." "What kind of steel?"
Mm-hmm.
"I don't know, but I see rivets." "What kind of rivets?"
"Yep."
"Like the kind you see in a battleship."
"Yep."
"What kind of battleship?" "A World War II battle cruiser." Now look at what's happened here. The soft, mushy clay is now a World War II battle cruiser, and I did not influence it. I did
Absolutely.
Not suggest it. I did not direct it. I merely examined it, and it changed.
Yep.
You know, there's a law in physics, the principle of observation. The act of observing a phenomena changes the phenomena.
Yep.
And so,
if I may, this show is Attention Talk Radio. It's about paying attention to things differently. And as you just said, if you look at it a little differently, it changes the phenomena, right?
Yeah, and so the left brain gets to see what's going on in the right brain, and in so viewing, things change.
Yep.
So now we have a World War II battleship.
Yep.
Following week, he goes off to a dentist convention somewhere, and the week after that, we're talking again, and he says, "You know," he says, "at the convention, one of the speakers got up, and he said, dentists have the highest rate of suicide," to which he yelled out, "Not the good ones." Brought the house down. He said, "You know, I yelled those words out before I realized what I was doing." He
wow.
said, "Then I thought about it, and I realized the words popped out of a gun on that ship."
Uh-huh. Wow.
So here's what happened. Just the way he'd have clammed up, if his operational language was that of of soft mushy clay.
Yep.
That's how automatically he fired back when his operational language was now battleship.
Yep.
He didn't have to think about it. He didn't have to give it some thought. It was automatic. And here we've taken the therapy out. There's no therapy. It's the it's not a psychotherapy. It's a process of allowing the innate mind, the resolving circuitry, innate circuitry of the right brain, to heal itself. Hippocrates said the body has the ability to heal itself. So too does the mind when given the opportunity. You simply have to know the operational language of the mind, which is pictures.
As you describe that, there's a few things that jump out on me. Number one, by taking the therapy piece out of it, it's really just about moving forward at that point in time.
Good point, because that's all I look for is movement. Movement towards the structures, the pictures, and then movement of the pictures and facilitating their change. Or whatever resolution healing abilities they have.
And, you know, it's kind of interesting because since there's no therapy, it's not about fixing anything. It's just really kind of about moving forward. And in this situation, the metaphor, I mean, by asking those questions, it sounded like he began to get clarity or a mental model with the soft, mushy clay and then started to migrate over towards the battleship. And in that change of insight, as he started to kind of think through that stuff, his behavior changed at the conference by blurting out those words. But in effect, it's funny, it doesn't sound to me like he changed. He just paid attention to things a little differently, and his behavior changed.
He responded differently.
Yes.
That point between the stimulus and the response, that one-tenth of a second point in between there was changed.
Absolutely.
And that's what we let me say it this way. When you ask someone a question, you'll notice their eyes go left, right, up, and down. Why? They are processing. They are looking inside one-tenth of a second, and they see a picture, and that picture is their guidance system as to how to react.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so fast and automatic, they don't even realize, we don't realize we're doing it. It's unconscious. It's automatic. We do it a million times a day, where we access information. This process, the metafocus method, slows down the perception of time to capture the images resonant in the psyche that you could say represent the problem, but the truth is they more than represent, they're at the base of the problem, because this is where the reactions are coming from.
Go ahead.
It's something that a persistent, uncomfortable feeling is something that we often try to consciously control or manage an uncomfortable feeling in whatever way we're doing.
Sure.
But if we can go to the subconscious level and change it there, change the root,
yep,
you change the problem. And that's the basis of all my work. You change the root, you change the problem.
I couldn't agree with you more. The one thing that I'd like to just kind of like what strikes at me is for the listeners, years ago, before I became a coach and or attention coach and kind of pay attention to, I would hear stories like what you said, the mushy clay and battleship. And you know something, I would have a hard time connecting with it a little bit. And
mm-hmm.
I think that one of the key things to point out is that what you described, you were just asking questions mm-hmm. of this particular dentist, and it was his metaphor, which is really, when you think about it, it's his personal experience.
Correct.
And while he got to mushy clay and then went to the battleship, that really is the point of it really is if somebody came to you, I would surmise, with a different thing or maybe even something very similar, the metaphor they would come up with would look completely different than mushy clay in a battleship, which is really it's a personal, it's as individual as the person. So for some of the listeners out there that they're more logical thinkers, I'm like, what's that? The thing about it is it's really it's about that personal experience. You can't really identify with what that particular metaphor is, other than it moved from mushy clay to something that was more really opposite in that situation, being a battleship.
Well, I'm really glad that you said that, because very often when I tell people a story like that, Jeff, the first thing they say is, "Gee, I could never do that." So most people can't relate to these stories. because that's not going to be their metaphor. But for anger, for them, it might be a volcano or a nuclear bomb. For them, the stress might be a rope that tightens and has a life of its own. It's going to be different for everybody.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the key guys. I do a lot of talking. There's like methodical thinking. There's insightful thinking. And methodical thinking is that very logical, like A, B, C, D, get you where you're going. Insightful thinking is gaining new insights by paying attention to them differently, which comes together from, you know, unexpected associations. And when you were describing that situation and asking the person, like, how's it feel, you're kind of like drilling down a little bit, and the person was just identifying, building their own mental model, and it really doesn't really matter what they're describing. The point really is they were gaining their own insights along the way.
Right.
As you described, left brain, right brain, which is outside of my area, but it just, I guess my point really here is that crowd out there who's very logical, like, wait a second, I don't get this. It's a personal, individual experience, and when that person visualizes or what you're describing, it's really about what they're seeing and what they can relate to in their brain, and that's what gives them the insight and actually moves them forward.
Right. And it's self-propelling because the imagery is meaningful. It's very personal. In terms of what it means to that person, and then when you change it in a healing way, it's impactful, and it's something that the person feels, and it does manifest in a behavioral difference when a new point of control is created.
Absolutely. I tell you what, I'd like to go on a commercial break for a second, but before we do, Dr. Siegel, can you let the listeners know how they could contact you? If they want to learn more about your methods or...
Sure. I'm at... my phone is 954-420-0755, and I can be reached by email at drsiegel@yahoo.com. That's drsiegel, drsiegel@yahoo.com.
All right. Tell you what, let's go to a commercial break. When we come back, I actually got an email from a caller or somebody in the show that had a question. So let's run to a break, and we'll come back, and we'll pick up where we left off, right?
Very good.
This is Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. When you're stuck, what do you pay attention to? If you're paying attention to the same logic or level of thinking that created the problem, maybe you need to pay attention to something else. DIG Coaching excavates outcomes by paying attention to what you pay attention to. After all, if you're paying attention to the wrong thing, you're likely paying attention to the wrong solution. To learn more about finding your obvious solution, go to digcoaching.com and download the free audio file, Finding the Obvious Solutions When They Aren't So Obvious. Don't delay, do it today.
If you have a topic that you want covered or question answered, just email us at info@digcoaching.com.
Be part of the show. Dial 646-652-4409. And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. Today, we are talking about the MetaFocus method with in our virtual studio today with Dr. Richard Siegel. Doctor, this has been a fascinating conversation so far. I want to keep going, but prior to the show, I got an email. The person asked to remain anonymous, but I guess they had gone on the internet and done some research or something, or maybe are familiar with you, and they write that they noticed that you do a lot of work with athletes. And their question is, have you worked or do you work with adults that have ADD?
I have, and those are two separate things. I mean, it can certainly manifest, ADD can manifest in a disruption of performance. But mostly in working with that, those have been two different issues in terms of performance and ADD. Well, for example, talking about metaphors and ADD, one client I had who had been diagnosed clinically with attention deficit. Their metaphor was weather vanes blowing in all different directions. And so you could see how that would relate to the problem. So when we found the weather vanes, when we identified it, when we named it, we gave it an opportunity to change. Once we found a way for those weather vanes to all blow in the same direction, it was certainly a difference of mind for him. You
Absolutely.
See, there's something in the process of naming something. When you get the name of something, that's the beginning of you controlling it. In Western science, the beginning of controlling a disease is naming it. Before they have the name, they don't know what's going on. The first step in control is naming it. So just by naming these weather vanes going in different directions gives us an opportunity to gain a sense of control, number one. Number two, to give those weather vanes a chance to find a way that they can blow differently, which will manifest in a different state of mind. Because when you change your resident picture, you change the way the person thinks and feels and reacts.
That's interesting. That kind of naming it's really powerful. I know a lot of times in coaching, specifically, I work with people. We kind of talk about the concept of their saboteur, and they, in a similar fashion, I ask them questions for them to kind of get an idea of what their saboteur looks like. And at the end of it, we almost always name it. And I've had them like the suit, the rubber band, the financial thing. And it's interesting because when they name it, it's funny because it's a metaphor that they can kind of latch their hands around, and they can actually notice when it's showing up. And then, from a coaching perspective, it's cool because it puts them at choice. You know, they can choose how they want to manage the saboteur, and I'm not going to get into the details of that, but the key is I actually identifying it and naming it is
right.
I think very, very powerful.
Right. And the additional power to this is that when you name it, in the right brain, you're identifying something that's real in the right brain. If you dream tonight about a table, in that dream the table is solid, because in the right brain all images are real. It can't tell the difference between fantasy and reality. It accepts it as real. So by naming a structure, by naming a resonant image, you then have a chance to allow it to resolve and move on its own.
Absolutely, absolutely. We have a little bit more time left, about 7 minutes. Is there any other situation or examples that you think would be interesting to kind of cover, or do you have any additional thoughts or comments? Or I really just want to ask you, what do you think? What can you offer in addition that you think that some of our callers might find interesting around the topic?
Well, two things come to mind. One is for people to understand or relate to this. That would be to understand how metaphor works. It's something that is hard to do for yourself, because it's hard to be in your left brain and your right brain at the same time. But maybe it's something that you could pay some attention to after the show, in terms of seeing, gee, what pictures are coming mind. Is there anything that's trying to make itself known to me that I'm not paying attention to? It's hard to do on your own. I'll say that. But on the other hand, the second thing that comes to mind is something that I wanted to share that just happened recently. I was working with a young man who had a tennis player. Who had a 1400 ranking, and we worked one time by phone, and in a month he went to an 800 ranking.
Wow.
And the interesting thing about this is that he doesn't speak English and I don't speak Portuguese. his coach translated it, and it went back and forth and back and forth, and it took about an hour and a half. But we finished it up, and the metaphor was changed, and he went on in one month's time from about 1400 to an 800 ranking. So I want that came to mind when you asked about the thing about athletics. And so for him, his attention was diverted differently. But again, you get the metaphor, you get the point of control, you get the point of control. It makes a difference, and you feel confident, and you feel you are in control, and you feel in control. It makes a difference. It's an integration of the left brain and the right brain. It's a brain integration. And it's an experience that you wouldn't ordinarily have because you don't ordinarily use your left brain and your right brain at the same time. So in effect, this is more of a whole mind experience.
I'm thinking out loud here a little bit, so kind of help me out. But, you know, so much of our fables, science discovery, so many tales, so many things out there really are metaphors to kind of help people see things differently.
Mm-hmm.
And what you've described when you're asking a person, you're asking them questions to kind of build their own metaphor, but can you speak to the role of, I don't know how to call these, third-party metaphors? Like here's an example. I do work a lot with adults that have ADD, and when they come and they start asking me about, you know, coaching and stuff like that, I say, hey, listen, imagine it's like this. You know, let's say you were born left-handed, but you live in a right-handed world. So when you go out, and, you know, in your first grade and it's time to cut and paste, the obvious solution is to give you a right-handed pair of scissors. After all, most people are right-handed. But it's the moment that you struggle that the obvious solution doesn't work with you. And if you pay attention to how you work and you notice that you're left-handed, it's obvious that you should use left-handed scissors. And I use that metaphor to kind of open up their mind a little bit and then say, just like ADD, you're an interest-based performer living in an important-based world. And if we would pay attention to what you're interested in, we can move forward, as opposed to paying attention to just what other people believe are important. And I use that metaphor. I'm not asking the questions like you did of the dentist, but I'm throwing it out there to try to help them wrap their arms, their brain around something to kind of put it into a context. Does
well,
that explain anything? Can you speak to that, like how those types of metaphors, because it's not a personal experience, it's just thrown out there, how that plays into the mix?
Well, I think what you're describing here is you're showing them how to use more of their mind,
mm-hmm.
but because you're showing them how to make more connections,
mm-hmm.
which is going to give them more options,
uh-huh.
Which is, you know, in those choices, in having extra choices or more choices, that leads to more success is what I'm hearing that you're doing.
Uh-huh. It's actually funny because as I'm talking about this, it sounds to me like it effectively what I'm doing is just open up their mind for more personal experience a little bit so that they begin to let go and make it easier for them to find their own metaphors, maybe.
Right. Right.
Either way, it's fascinating. And it is, you know, the metaphoric conversation in general to me is it's really kind of underrated when you think about it. I mean, it's pretty powerful.
Well, it is underrated, and most people don't know about it. They're not aware that it's around, but it even goes back 2,500 years. Aristotle had said the most important thing to be is a master of metaphor. And that's gotten forgotten about in 2,500 years. That's the last thing we focus on. When you say the word metaphor, it actually sounds like an English lesson, like you're going to be in class again in fifth grade. But really, it's a powerful option, or what's the word I'm looking for? It's a powerful ability that the mind has at creation, at making things happen, and changing things on a level, on a dynamic level, that is not ordinarily available.
Well, it's interesting because when you're saying that, I like to think of them as it's really kind of a tool, in a very, very useful tool for you to use in looking at the world a little differently. Like
exactly.
Like the dentist, you know. He wasn't looking at the world, but he went through the mushy clay, came out to the battleship, looked at the world a little differently, and look what changed for him.
Right. You know, as you're talking, I'm looking on a line here, on a quote here from, I know I'm not saying the name right, Jose Ortega y Gasset. He says, metaphor is perhaps one of man's most fruit, fruitful potentialities. Its efficacy verges on magic, and it seems a tool for creation, which God forgot inside one of his creatures when he made him. And, you know, it's very powerful when it's used in the right way. It's hard to get to because we don't ordinarily think that way. As you said, we're logical, left-brain thinkers, and this sounds all esoteric and in the sky and way out there, when in fact it's way in there. It's way in there. And when you find the metaphor, the structure that resonates as at the core of an obstacle, of an inability to attain a goal, to get rid of a feeling that's in the way of life, then getting that new point of control can make a big difference. And I've seen it time and time again.
Absolutely. Well, here, we're running out of time here, but before we go, can you give the callers, again, contact information so if they want to learn more,
sure,
they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, if you want information, I can send you information at drsiegel@yahoo.com. My phone is 954-420-0755.
Dr. Siegel, I'd like to thank you again for being on our show today. It was our pleasure. Again, for those out there, no show next week. We'll be looking to come back on the 16th of October. So, again, thank you very much, Dr. Siegel, for being on the show. We look forward to maybe having you on again. And everybody have a great day.
Thank you for having me.
Yep. Nope.